Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mysterious Topics Podcast. This is John. Before we get started, if you are planning to do any shopping at Amazon.com and would like to support this podcast, please go to our website first, MysteriousTopics.com, and click on our Amazon link. It will not cost you any extra, and we greatly appreciate your continued support. Now, today we're going to be talking about the Westall UFO incident, which took place in Melbourne, Australia. And I'll just read a brief description. The Westall UFO encounter is an event that occurred on April 6, 1966 in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. Around 11 a.m. for about 20 minutes, more than 200 students and teachers at two Victorian state schools allegedly witnessed an unexplained flying object which descended into a nearby open wild grass field. The paddock was adjacent to a grove of pine trees in an area known as the Grange, which is now a nature reserve. According to reports, the object then ascended in a northwesterly direction over the suburb of Clayton, South Victoria, Australia. Joining me to discuss the Westall UFO incident is 14-year-old Charlotte Lily Anderson from Brisbane, Australia. Hello, Charlotte.
Hello, John. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for guest hosting with me today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, before we get started, I just wanted to ask you, how did you first get interested in topics such as these?
Well, I've been introduced to them from a very young age, from my father and my mother, you know, watching X-Files or just Doctor Who or talking about these kind of things, and it kind of piqued my interest. And then, you know, I went further and researched them or listened about them or even watched them. And along the way, I've even thought of some, you know, possible jobs where I get to, you know, hunt the supernatural or be a paranormal investigator.
Well, that's great. It's great to hear when someone young has an interest in all of these. I started young too, just exactly the same way, hearing about it and reading it in books. At this time now, you have so much more available to you with the with everything online. It's a lot easier to get the information. So,
yeah.
Now,
I think.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. No, I just think it's definitely the age where people can know more about this kind of topic.
Yes, I agree. Do you happen to know the general view of the people of Australia about the Westall UFO incident?
Well, the general view is often very similar to how the media presents it, and this instance is very much the same. I think the majority of the population either hasn't heard of it or thinks it's a hoax or military-based. But, you know, of course, you have thousands and thousands of believers who are positive that this is a UFO and contact of extraterrestrials. But in the end, it's probably about 30, 70, 40, 60%, the most being skeptics.
Okay, yeah. And after looking into this, I realized this is probably the equivalent of the Roswell UFO incident in America here. I think this is one that probably most of the people, if not everyone, of Australia probably know about.
Yeah, it is widely known. Like, talking to people about it at my school, there, you know, they even made the comparison to Roswell.
Now, you live in Brisbane, which is probably, what is it, like over 1,600 kilometers away from where the incident was in Melbourne, correct?
Yeah.
It's quite a distance. So have you ever been there?
No, but I do. I know someone who has actually been there just to, you know, in the area because they have family. And they say that, you know, it's really interesting because they want to know more, but not many people talk about it.
Okay. And after you've been researching this topic, what is your view of the Westall UFO incident?
It's hard to say because I really want it to be an actual UFO incident, but there is a logical explanation about how it actually happened. It was a government project. And, you know, the time and place makes sense for what they were researching.
Okay, yeah, and we can get to that government project as we go along here, but I would also look at that as a little bit of the same kind of stories that we heard here about Roswell, and that where the explanation can be questioned.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we should probably give a little of the background of the story so our listeners know exactly what we are talking about here. And I'll just read a little brief description and then I'll let you add to it. Now, at about 11 a.m., April 6, 1966, numerous school children and some teachers at Westall High School in Clayton, which is a Melbourne suburb, observed a UFO which apparently landed nearby. An account by one of the students appeared in the school magazine, the Clayton Calendar, which was produced by pupils of the grades 6C through 5C. I was in class when the disturbance occurred outside. I didn't take any notice, and when the bell rang for morning recess, my classmates and I went to our lockers and then walked out into the yard. We noticed that all the girls who were doing physical education were gathered right down near the end of our playing field. Suddenly, the school came alive with excitement, and everyone began running down towards where the girls were. I was among the surging mob. I had seen something that looked very unusual in the sky. As I looked up, I saw a dazzling, silvery object flying around some pine trees, which grew on a ridge about a quarter of a mile directly behind the school. It then flew across some open paddocks, also behind the school, and returned to the pines. On the other side of the ridge, there was a small field. The thing hovered over the pines and descended behind them, and must have been directly over the field. I then lost sight of it because of the pines. So that's how it started that day, Charlotte. And there were many witnesses. There were, I guess, well over 200 kids and adults combined, the teachers as well as some other people that just people living nearby, apparently, that saw this. So it was a very widely witnessed event.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Like, I was researching some witness reports, and you had some from shop owners to children at the school to even people, you know, one student was coming back to school late from a dentist appointment and saw the UFO with his mother.
Oh, okay. And then people started seeing what they described as five light aircraft, which seemed to be circling the object and were flying at a relatively low altitude. It seemed like they were either playing a cat and mouse kind of game with the object or just trailing it and trying to, monitor it.
Yeah, that was probably the part that a lot of the military reports left out. In the military reports, they talked about, you know, the UFO and what it could have been, but they never talked about basically the other objects circling it.
Right, and some of the witnesses said they actually saw three of the, what they described as flying saucers, while some of the others said they just noticed one.
Yeah. I mean, it's very hard to tell with such a wide range of interviews that have been taken, you know, decades apart, some of them. And of course, you know, sometimes a story can change the more you tell of it. And your memory. And I'm not saying that, you know, none of this happened. Just, you know, it's highly likely that some of the facts were a little bit embellished over the years.
And not only over the years, but even if you have just a regular event that happens, like we've seen this many times with a, you know, like a robbery, and there's not even 200 witnesses, maybe only 20 witnesses, but right at that time when the police come and interview the people, they get 18 different descriptions of the person that did it. So,
yeah.
So to get this many people that actually sort of agree is, I think that's telling.
It really is, because, you know, as much as most scientists or even Aristotle saying consensus is not science, consensus can really be the basis for a lot of investigation and is incredibly telling in most cases.
Right. Now, when you said earlier that you really want this to be an actual UFO, did you mean an actual UFO from another planet, or just the fact, because we always talk about that here on Mysterious Topics, that UFO simply means we don't know what it is. It doesn't mean that there's little aliens inside necessarily.
Yeah. I really hope that it is, I really want it to be an extraterrestrial, you know, visitation, because that would really prove that, you know, there is the capability of going at the speed of light, and, you know, that we're not just, you know, that we've still got time to grow scientifically in order to, you know, explore, and it kind of just breaks down more of the barriers that people think, you know, in order to stop them from traveling.
Yes, that would definitely be proof.
Yeah.
At least that they have some high technology, whether they were traveling faster than the speed of light, or whether they're traveling from some other dimension or something.
Yeah, that would be really cool. But then I think it'd also be really interesting biologically to see, you know, if they're carbon-based life forms like us, or maybe silicon or anything like that. And it would just give us also, you know, a broader scientific understanding, but also a broader philosophical scientific explanation.
Yes, it certainly would. And if they were traveling faster than the speed of light, they would obviously have a lot more knowledge about technology than us, and that may be very helpful to us.
Yeah, maybe we could, like, have a peace treaty between them, share technology or, you know, or work together to maybe explore the universe.
Now, what do you make of the fact that shortly after the incident, apparently the school had many people supposedly from the government coming, and they were actually sort of almost bullying the kids. In fact, some of the people that are adults now that were kids then, I saw a link to a show from Australia, a news show where they were interviewing three of the witnesses, and they said they felt like they were being bullied by these men telling them that they didn't see anything.
Yeah, like I've got one witness report here saying we were hysterical and that it didn't happen. And the men in black interviewed some of the other kids. So it has a very men in black, you know, TV show kind of X-Files part to it.
Yeah, and I think that this little clip is interesting. I'll have it in the show notes for people can watch it. It's only about, I think, 15 minutes long with three of the witnesses that it was Jackie Arndt and Joy Clark and another one. I can't remember her name, but they're steadfast in what they saw, even though they were only about 12 at the time. And I just think it's very interesting because they also talk about a girl that I read some reports on by the name of Tanya, who actually did get hysterical when she saw it. She got very distraught, and they took her to the hospital. And I had just read that, and they said that they weren't sure. There were just reports that they had never saw her again, and then there were reports that weren't even sure that she was a real person. But these ladies speak of her and say they were, not only did they know her, but one of them was a friend that would go over to her house. And when she went to her house to check on her, somebody answered the door that was speaking in English and said that no one by the name of Tanya ever lived here. But she said the problem with that is that I was her friend and I was in that house many times. And her parents didn't really speak English that well. They were from, I think, Yugoslavia or something.
Yeah, that's evidence like that is really peculiar and really pushes forward the idea of extraterrestrials or a big cover-up. And I mean, it could have also have been because they were working on military devices. She might have known something, or her parents might have been working at the base and they couldn't compromise. But either way, it's still incredibly peculiar.
Yeah, and I think it adds credibility to this story of that definitely something happened. There was these people all said it was 11 a.m. in the morning. It was broad daylight. It wasn't like their eyes were playing tricks on them or something. There were so many witnesses. So something happened, and I know the military Did you have that explanation that they said? Did you want to talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. So basically, the federal government was in the midst of a secret radiation testing project known as the HIVAL program. It was both a joint United States and Australian project where they tried to develop ways that they could monitor atmospheric radiation levels, quite possibly in the event of a nuclear bomb being sent off. And if they were in the bunkers, they could have sent the balloons up to test to see if the surface was okay. And so the atmospheric balloons had sensors and were described as, you know, large, silver, spherical, but almost disc-like at the same time.
What do you think of that? Do you think that is a logical explanation?
Yeah, I really think it's a logical explanation because it was in the midst of the Cold War. That was a real prominent threat for a lot of countries against the USSR. There was always that lingering threat of total annihilation. So, of course, the governments were going to try and work out ways so that they could, you know, stop this or backup plans. So it just seems quite logical.
Yeah, the only problem I have is in listening to some of the witnesses' reports saying that when the light aircraft arrived and they were circling it, that at some point in time, the UFO actually took off and it said it made them look like they were standing still and they couldn't keep up with it any longer. And I would have a hard time believing that an atmospheric balloon could do that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, there is every explanation definitely has its flaws, and just looking at this, it's so hard to even just understand all the fact because the government still hasn't released, you know, all of the information on the balloons or even that project. They've only released small amounts to the press because it's the 50-year anniversary this year. So people were investigating it, much like the TV program, which I think was Studio 10.
Yes.
Asked them about it. So they gave them little bits of information to quite possibly satisfy their needs as journalists.
Yeah, I just think it's so similar to the Roswell incident here where the exact same thing happened. They actually, first of all, someone from the military did say that it was a flying saucer of some sort that crashed, and then within less than 24 hours, they had changed it to that was just a weather balloon. And so here they are in this particular incident. And I'm not sure when they offered up this explanation, but I think this came quite a long time later too, didn't it?
Yeah, I've got a similar report here. But, you know, it was such a secret operation, only a handful of people knew about it. In case, you know, they had infiltrators inside their military and scientific community. So, of course, maybe that guy believed, you know, it was a UFO because he had no clue about this. And then kind of backtracked when he was told the story. Or if it was a UFO, it could have possibly been a threat. You know, you'll lose your job. You'll be in danger. We'll run you up to in your neck to death or something like that to keep him quiet.
And another logical explanation could be that it was, in fact, a government program that was actually working on engineering a flying saucer type of an aircraft. And this is 1966, and they suggested the same thing with Roswell and other ones that were earlier. So I could see where governments were sharing information, and they were probably trying to test fly some of these things. And I think it very well could have been that it was the government. It wasn't just the balloon. It was because the witnesses saw an actual disc object that was flying, making rather remarkable moves in the air, unlike a balloon. And, you know, I just think they probably thought, well, we'll offer up this explanation, but I don't know. That would be my theory.
Yeah, that's more logical and has less loopholes than the story that they gave the media. And it would make sense that they would have kept this under wraps even after this time. So if they knew that they had this they were working on that technology or even had it, it wouldn't have been the best things to give it out at that time or even now in case they had it as a secret weapon or, you know, a backup plan.
No, that's very true. Are there any other parts of the story that you wanted to discuss?
There's the fact that very quickly, even before, you know, anyone was called or the military was called or emergency services were called, they came pretty much, you know, minutes after the event happened.
Yes.
Yeah, quite interesting, I found.
Yes, that is quite interesting that they would be there that quick. I think we discussed on other incidents here in America how, well, the Roswell incident, for instance, it was actually like a day or two later before they even knew about it, and it took a long time to respond, the government. And then ones that happened later on, as you said here, they were there within a half hour. So it's like they kind of figured out how to respond to these things.
I mean, even because the Roswell incident happened 20 or so years before this happened.
Yes.
People were, you know, already interested in UFOs. There was a Melbourne UFO Research Foundation at the time. So everyone was already hyped up about UFOs from the Roswell incident and other incidences that spanned across the 20 or so years. The military could have known it was going in the direction or wouldn't have had a GPS on it, could have just had trackers watching it the whole time.
Yes, and if it were, as I suggested, a test flight of some sort of high-tech, for the time, aircraft that the military was doing, and something went technically wrong where they kind of lost control of it a little bit, or maybe the pilot was just being a little renegade and flying it where he shouldn't have, but whatever. If that were the case, that's why the military got there so quickly.
Yeah.
It would be hard to see the military if it were a separate, if it were, you know, aliens, for instance, how they would get there so quickly on the ground. I mean, you'd think I could see them getting there in the air, but on the ground, that's quite interesting.
And I'm sure if it was just a weather balloon, and even if it had, you know, all of the weather radiation monitoring gadgets on it, they probably wouldn't have swarmed in so quickly. They would have let it go for a little bit because the majority of people wouldn't have known about it, understood it. It would have just been a harmless object.
Yes, that's true. And they wouldn't send so many people out to tell people that they didn't see anything if it were just a weather balloon. They would say, well, you saw our weather balloon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if it were involved in a secret project like it were, they could simply tell everybody it's not a secret project, it's just a weather balloon.
That would definitely get rid of mass panic.
Yeah, I would think so too. So, okay, well, did you want to say anything else about this?
Can I just add that Australia has had so many potential UFO, potential abductions, you know, potential crop circles, that, you know, this is a little bit kind of hard to ignore. Back to the whole consensus thing, there is so much evidence or events that may or may not be extraterrestrial that there comes a point when you go, maybe it is. You know, there's so many, not just media representation of possible, you know, sightings, that it's kind of become not normal but widely accepted that Australia could be a hotspot for aliens.
Yeah. Yes, there seem to be quite a few incidents down there. We'll have to talk about some of the other ones in a future date. And I also wanted to mention this documentary that Shane Ryan has made. I assume that you watched that?
No, I haven't watched that, but it's on my list.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll have a link to that too in our show notes for anyone interested listening. He worked on it for, I think, 10 years, interviewing well over 100 witnesses. So I find that to be very compelling evidence as well. He did a lot of hard work talking to these people and putting together a very good documentary on the Westall UFO incident.
Yeah, when someone spends that much time on something, it definitely gives it a little bit of credibility.
Yeah, yeah. And when you see the actual people as adults now, of course, but when they were kids that saw it talking about it, I think it adds a lot of credibility to the fact that this wasn't just a bunch of young kids getting hysterical about a weather balloon or something. I think it's very good to have that documentary.
Yeah, and it also informs the now generation of it, or, you know, maybe those in 5 to 10 years, who, when the media circus kind of dies down and, you know, everyone just levels with it and goes, yep, just military-based, nothing paranormal at all, or extraterrestrial, that it'll form them, give them the other side of the story.
Yeah, I agree. And I just have one more little bit I wanted to mention about Sean Matthews that Shane Ryan did interview. And he was working, he was a boy who was on his family lease land that was at the Grange Reserve. And I guess they had some horses there and that. So he wasn't a student there, but he was up there working on that land and he witnessed it. And some of his comments were very interesting. He said that he saw it drop down behind the trees and a minute or so later it went straight up and was just gone. And he did say he did not see any light aircraft trailing the object, as others said, but he said that the way this thing moved, there is no way it could have been a weather balloon or a light aircraft. A helicopter, no way, no noise, wrong shape. Didn't move like it. It came out of the distance, stopped, and then just dropped. And he said then it just sort of cruised and then slightly descent at an angle. It just stopped, dropped, and then went straight up. So that's another witness that is describing something that couldn't have been a weather balloon or even just a regular plane, aircraft or something.
Yeah, I think was he the one who also videotaped the event? Because there was one person who was videotaping a nature documentary, not necessarily, you know, not that he was doing that, but they had a video camera on them for some reason and they videotaped it.
I don't see anything that said that he was videotaping it, no.
Never mind, it must have been someone else then.
Yeah, and there was another report that the local news channel actually ran it and they had a tape of their reports for 2 days and it all of a sudden just went missing one day, the videotape of that report. So they don't even have the news video of that anymore, I guess.
Yeah, definitely suspicious.
Yeah, it's just odd that they would go to that extent if it were just a weather balloon.
I mean, if it is a UFO or military, I mean, that's a lot to go to. It's definitely an extreme. Bullying little kids to, you know, kind of be quiet or kind of taking evidence, moving people, covering up identities.
Yes, it adds to the mystique of this whole story. Okay, well, I don't know. I think we pretty well covered it, Charlotte. What do you think?
Definitely.
All right. Well, again, I want to thank you very much for doing this. I think you did a great job.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for doing it.
Well, it was a really great experience and a nice way to talk about the Westfall UFO incident.
Okay, well, that was Charlotte Lily Anderson from Brisbane, Australia, acting as my co-host today on the Westall UFO incident. And I think she did a great job, and she is very knowledgeable on the subject. And I hope you all enjoyed our podcast today. For more on this topic and other topics, you can visit our website, mysteriestopics.com. Thank you for listening. Bye.